Welcome back to Focus 580. This is hour number two of the show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Furness at the controls this morning. We're pleased to have back here on the program, once again, Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette newspaper. Also, his work appears in Sound and Vision. I was just looking at that the other day online, and in the January issue, he has an article about some home theater systems.
That was last January.
Oh, that was last January? Okay. It was last January. Do you still write for Sound and Vision?
Not if I can avoid it.
Oh great. I'm getting off to a wonderful start here this morning. Okay. Well, he has appeared in that publication. He does, as far as I know, still appear in the News Gazette with a regular column of rating and writing about home electronics. And that's what we do when he is here on the program, because it is constantly changing. There are always new products. And for consumers, if you're going out there to buy something, it can be very, very confusing, sorting among all the various options. And it's also just interesting to have him on here and to have him talk about what is new. And things certainly have changed quite a lot in the last, I don't know, decade or so.
And, or 15 minutes.
Or 15 minutes. And I'm sure that the way people get their media and what they do with it and all of that, it's going to continue to change a lot in who knows what it's going to be like even 2-3 years from now. So here's the idea. If you're interested in bringing some new piece of equipment into your home, maybe you're thinking about buying a great new big television, or you're thinking about something to record video, or you need a new CD player, or whatever. You know, if you're really confused, you'd like to get a little bit of advice, you give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. You know, for the first time in 29 years, I did not attend the Consumer Electronics Show. Thought I'd take a year off. I do still work for the online part of Sound and Vision occasionally. And I talked to their online director, and he said, no, we're taking the year off online. And sure enough, I mean, last year there were dozens of articles, many of them penned by yours truly, about CES. And this year, there's just hardly anything online from Sound and Vision. The show has gotten so big and difficult to cover that they decided just to regroup and take the year off. I've been covering Consumer Electronics Show first for 10 years for the Daily News and the Sun-Times, and then for the Tribune, and then 10 years for Sound and Vision. And this year I decided just it's too big and too difficult to cover the show. But I do want to correct something that NPR said earlier this morning on Morning Edition, where they had this expert from the New York Times, who they put Macworld and CES on the same footing, saying they're two really big trade shows. That's like saying Muhammad and Chicago are two really important cities. There's really no comparison. As much as people may love the Apple products, CES is the big deal. But I swear that Steve Jobs must be hiring Karl Rove to plan his strategy these days, because he stole the whole spotlight away from CES, where everybody in the industry in the world was there, for his one company, Apple, in San Francisco, which coincidentally, usually Macworld has always followed CES. This year he made sure it happened during CES, stole all the attention with his two new products, his little iPhone, which I've actually indirectly written about, this Swiss Army knife kind of product in the News Gazette in the past few weeks, and his internet connectivity, whole house distribution entertainment system box that's going to revolutionize the world, or at least he likes to think so. But actually, there wasn't all that much news coming out of CES. I've checked all the websites and the trade sheets and everything, and I was amazed that, yeah, everything's gotten bigger. There's now a 108-inch LCD TV, which I'm sure, David, you're going to get through your front door somehow as soon as they give you one.
That would be a problem.
And you know, there's better resolution on the TV sets and all this improvements, but nothing quite revolutionary. As the commentator earlier on NPR said, you know, every year they've talked about this convergence of what watching your TV with your computer, et cetera, and every year it's the same story. He's right, is that they keep saying, you know, this is the year that computers and TV are going to converge. Well, they are slowly but surely melding, but nothing really revolutionary happened at CES this year, unlike some past years. And I think we're going to see a kind of a slowdown for a while, because now we have HD TV. It's here. At some point, they're going to decide either that Blu-ray or HD DVD is going to become the format for high definition for the home, or the two systems are going to be obsolete and can be replaced by simply a hard drive, and you won't need an optical disc for your movies. You'll just download the information from the internet to a hard drive, or even perhaps buy the hard drive from, or rent the hard drive from Blockbuster or whoever the movie store is you're renting from, Hollywood Video or whatever, watch the movie and take the hard drive back to be reloaded with a new movie. You won't need a DVD if these jerks who run Sony and Toshiba don't sit down and get their act together. Now, yes, LG Electronics did introduce a combination player that plays both Blu-ray and HD DVD, the two competing systems, but it costs $1,300. You can buy an HD DVD player for $500, or you can buy a Blu-ray player now, I guess, for about $800. So that doesn't really solve the problem. It just makes it more expensive. So those are some of the things that are happening. That happened last week at this time at CES. But nothing quite revolutionary where people are going to have to rush out and buy it right away. There is this evolution toward what's called 1080p. That means 1080 progressive high-definition TVs. These are only important if you plan to buy a high-definition DVD player. Because for broadcast, it's still going to be 1080i. So all of you who bought the original high-definition sets will not have obsolete sets. They've also added the high-definition multimedia interface called HDMI is now version 1.3, which entitles it or allows it to do more functions and also has more copy protection built in. But those of you with 1.1 probably won't have a problem either. So before we take calls, though, somebody called in off the air a little earlier inquiring about cassette decks, especially double cassette decks, and if they still make them, how do you get them serviced? Basically, I have one of those. I have a wonderful Technics that's about 20 years old, and I thought it was starting to fail. And I loaned it to a friend of mine who fortunately happens to be one of the chief technicians for the U of I in the chemistry department. He said, oh, no, just the belts were dirty. I took the belts out, cleaned them, put them back in, the thing's like new. And so I would advise this person, if you're having problems with your double cassette deck, it may just be a belt that needs cleaning, possibly needs replacement. I don't know who does that. I guess Radio Doctor still does that sort of thing here in town. It's so hard to get these things serviced these days. You still can buy blank cassettes. I bet you can go out to one of the big box stores and still find a shelf of blank cassettes because people still use cassettes. So as far as buying a new double cassette deck, they are getting pretty scarce, but I'm sure some of the major manufacturers are still making them. And I'm not sure whether people like Sony still make them, but I bet you could find one Technics or another brand or two that still make a double cassette deck somewhere, or buy a recent vintage used one, but they will be disappearing pretty quickly from the shelves.
Yeah. I think also the caller was wanting to know, are the companies that make records and, gosh, do they still make records and CDs, still releasing material on cassette? Particularly, I think the caller was interested in books on tape, whether they're still available in that format.
Whatever was duplicated is still available in that format. I notice when I go through record catalogs that a lot of things that aren't on CD are still on cassette from the old days. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're making anything new. I don't think, like I bought my new car, no longer has a cassette player. And cars generally don't have cassette players any longer. So all the books on tape are now books on CD, basically. So I think from this point forward, the newer books are not going to be available on cassette, although for the visually impaired audience, they may be making some exceptions. But as far as the pop audience who just goes to the store and wants to buy something to listen to in the car, they're going to be on CD rather than on cassette. At some point, they're going to be on thumb keys, those little USB keys, which is much more versatile than a CD. You can hold a lot more ultimately. So you could put a whole book on one little thumb drive rather than taking three or four CDs to put it on. And the cost would actually ultimately at some point will be less because these little thumb drives now are getting to be really cheap. Yeah. And then after you've listened to the book, you can erase it and put a new book on there. You know? So it's, but that's the fate. I don't know. I don't keep track exactly of what's available on cassette, but don't expect much in the future.
Okay. We have a couple of callers here. And if you want to talk with our guest, Rich Warren, writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette, has been following this field for quite a long time now. You got questions, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Someone first up in Georgetown on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I got a couple questions. Okay. First of all, I have a CD player. It will play some CDs, but I put other in and it says no disc. And I've used the spray and sprayed it out. But is there something that's wrong with the disc, the CD? Why it will, when I put that one in, it'll just say no disc and it won't play, but yet it'll play others.
Yeah, well, CDs vary minutely in tolerance from one disc to another. And most of the time, the players can adjust to this tolerance. But if your player, if the CD is at one edge of the tolerance scale, and your player has adjusted to the other edge, or it is starting to age to the point where it doesn't compensate any longer, certain CDs won't play. I've had the exact same experience in my broadcast CD players. One machine, I have two identical broadcast CD players. One machine will play a disc, the other one won't. So it's both issues with the...
Is there anything you can do to that CD, or is it just the way it is?
You can't do anything to the CD unless the CD is damaged in some way. You can try using one of the CD repair kits. If there's a noticeable scratch on the CD, for example, especially near the center of the CD where the table of contents is located, that's where the CD player goes first. It has to read that table of contents in order to play the disc.
Okay.
And if that area is damaged at all, if there's a fingerprint or the scratch or whatever, it'll say, I can't read the table of contents, no disc.
No disc, okay.
So you can try. There are some CD repair kits on the market, and they have varying effectiveness. But I have used that and sometimes solved disc playing problems. Or your player may just be getting old and not want to compensate for variations in discs. I mean, a disc can be infinitesimally off-center, but enough to throw the player for a loop.
And I actually haven't taken it to somebody else's CD player to see if it would play on there. If it won't play there, then I probably am assuming it's a bad disc or something wrong. But I don't know. I will check those other things. Other question I have some home movies that my mother took years ago and would like to go through them and put them onto something, you know, I don't know, a CD, a DVD, or whatever you put them on now. I know a while back I had a friend that put them on the VCR tapes, but I figured there's something better now. And do you know what the procedure is or what the best thing is, or are you in, know anything about that?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. I've helped various neighbors. The thing is, if you want to do it yourself, it's a pretty entailed procedure because you need what's called a telecine to play the film and then get it into your computer, digitize it, get into your computer, and then start editing it and using software on your computer. And because it's video, you need a lot of memory and a good-sized hard drive, and it's more than most people want to get involved with. If you have a very recent computer and you love messing with your computer and doing this stuff, it's a really fulfilling thing to do. It's a lot of fun. Spend a weekend every month doing this. If you're not, I would recommend, and I have no vested interest in this company, but they've done some work for me and they've done some work for my neighbors, and they were very pleased. It's a place called Finish Point. It's out in the old farm shop in Champaign. I said I have no connection with this company except the fact they've done good work. They seem to know what they're doing. They can handle just about any format. And my neighbor even said that the price was, she considered it pretty reasonable.
Okay.
It is expensive, by the way. I'm going to tell you that you're in for a shocking expense because it's incredibly time-consuming to do this. You have to play the film in real time and then get it through the computer. And this is not including any editing. They're just going to put it on DVDs, and then you can dump it in your computer and edit it and burn new DVDs. But it saves a lot of problems in the getting the film into the computer.
Okay, what I was thinking, and I have a cousin that when he's the one that put it on the VCR tapes back a few years ago, and he said what I needed, and if we can find it in the family, somebody in the family has it, he said you can't put this old film in the old movie projector because it's so brittle it'll break. So he had a little thing with my grandmother's, and you actually reeled it by hand, and it went over a light bulb type thing. And so he said, I really need to go through those films individually and then pick out the pieces that are good, because some of that, I don't want to send all of that to them because a lot of it may not even be any good or something I don't even want to keep. So I would need to go through and, you know, check it all first and pick out what I actually want to keep and then take that to them. Is that, and then put that part on the computer and edit it? Or you're saying just put it all on and try to edit it on the computer?
Yeah, it's probably better just to try to get it. I mean, even though they do charge by the minute, it's probably better just to get it all on the computer and edit it on the computer, which can be very quick and easy to do compared to trying to physically cut the film and splice it, because most people, you can easily ruin film by trying to cut and splice it if you're not an expert at film.
Yeah, you don't know what you're doing, right.
Film editing is a very specialized task, and it's very easy to do, especially old film, which is brittle. And you're better just try to get it all into a digital form, and then you can go on the computer and just click, click, click with your mouse. There's some great $75 software out there. As long as you have a good-sized hard drive and decent amount of memory in the computer, you can do it on the computer and then burn a new DVD, and it doesn't cost anything to do that once you've got it in the digital form. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you. We have a number of other callers here, and we're talking this morning about what is new in the world of consumer electronics, audio, video. Our guest is Rich Warren. He writes a regular column for the News Gazette and has been following developments in this field for a while and has been with us on and off over the years. Been a little while, but we're pleased to have him back here on the show. And if you have questions and it is confusing, believe me, I'm as confused as anybody else. You can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. There are several callers here in line, and we will get right back to them. And next up is someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a database, an Access database, that's a book collection. I'm a book collector, and I periodically buy books, and I have about 1,200 in my collection. And as you can imagine, if I just go out, I occasionally buy one that they don't already have. And I've been trying to find something like a handheld computer, something that could that I could put my Access database on. I don't really know the terminology, what you call these things, but at any rate, I found one that you could convert this Access database to another database, but it didn't support queries, which of course makes it useless. And recently I heard about something called, I think it's from Verizon, you can get a phone there, XZ6700, but I'm told by an expert in the field that that doesn't support Access. I'm looking, the bottom line is, where could I find, is there such a thing? Is there a database out there that can be stored on a small computer, a handheld computer, that I can convert my Access database to and still find it useful?
First of all, I might say that the Afternoon Magazine today will be featuring computers here on AM 580, and you may get a better answer from our computer expert than from me. However, there are several models of small handheld computers that run Microsoft Windows, which means your Access database would run. They are anywhere from a couple of pounds roughly, and they have some pretty decent screens. So you could transfer your Access database directly to one of these small handhelds and still have your Access database run just the way it does on your home machine if you're willing to put up with something that weighs 2 pounds and is not a lot larger, but considerably larger than the cell phone kind of thing, but you'll get full functionality. As far as other databases, I'm not an expert in that. I personally use FileMaker Pro. I'm not sure how that would compare to Access for your purposes and whether the files can be converted. But I think that there are plenty of $800 handheld computers out there that would run the software that you're running and run your database the way it is.
Where would I be able to find these things? Would Best Buy have them?
Best Buy or Circuit City would have some of them. There are places that specialize in these things up in the Chicago area. Micro Center, I think, is one. Perhaps there's another CompUSA. But you can try with starting with Best Buy and Circuit City and computer specialists here in town. I think it has some strange name. A Toshiba makes one called Quizmo or something like this. It sounds like a submarine sandwich, but it's it's a very tiny handheld computer, and I think Samsung's making one now, and they're in the $800 price range, and they can run all the regular Windows programs. They come with Windows, and there's basically a normal computer. They're harder to use because the keyboards are small and the screens are smaller, but they have full Windows functionality, and that's probably where you should start. Because I don't think you're going to get what you want with any of these ultra micro cell phone kind of all combo units, because then some of them do run a version of Windows, but they don't have the memory for a big database, and using those keyboards becomes just absolutely impossible.
Who did you say made the Quizmo?
I think it's Toshiba. I'm not even sure I got the model number right. I may have confused that. That may be their big machine. I know Toshiba has a little machine, as does, I think, Samsung has one now. And again, I don't follow the computer, so you may want to call back at 105 and speak to our computer expert. But I know there are machines out there that are quite small and will run your software without any changes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. And we'll just keep on going here. Talk next with someone in Chicago. This is line number two. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Rich, mm-hmm. It's good to talk to you again. Over the Christmas holidays, we kept hearing they really were hawking HD this and HD that. Now, I know you have DLP and a bunch of other stuff that I don't know about. How do you know which is best for you?
Well, that's an excellent question. I could take up the rest of the program talking about that. I've spent a couple of columns in the News Gazette discussing it, trying to decide between DLP, which is a rear projection technology, a digital light processing. It's a Texas Instruments patent. It's also called micro mirrors and micro display.
Yeah, they were hawking a Mitsubishi 52-inch DLP, and I thought, boy, that's got to be a behemoth for a TV.
Well, actually not, because that technology allows to have a rear projection TV set that's only 6 to 8 inches thick or deep. But then you have plasma, you have LCD. There are all these different technologies. Then there's versions of LCD rear screen projection that Sony has its own trademark, SXRD, I think it is. And JVC has its own version called DILA, and that uses liquid crystal on silicone, which is referred to as Lycos. Very confusing, very, very confusing. Personally, there are issues with the DLP technology, is that in certain sets, under certain conditions, you get this rainbow effect, this moire pattern with rainbows in the picture, and it's inherent in the system, and there are ways around it, but only the best sets can deal with that. I would prefer at this point, unless I'm getting something that's anything over 60 inches, then you need to get a rear projection set, because plasma and LCD become too expensive and too unwieldy. But at this point, I would say plasma and LCD are tied. I think a year ago, maybe plasma had a better picture. New LCD technologies and new LCD fabrication allows making bigger screens, less expensive. In the 40 to 50-inch range, I think it's neck and neck between plasma and LCD, and there are some incredibly good-looking sets on the market, just jaw-dropping sets. That I was standing in the checkout line of one of the big-box stores, and they had one of these LCD screens behind the checkout, and they could have stolen my money, because I was just looking at this picture.
Well, you know, I think you know I'm visually impaired, so when people ask me which is best, I tell them, well, I don't know. I'll wait till my good buddy Rich comes on and ask him. But when they ask me about the VCR, for instance, and the DVD player, now, as far as we're concerned, I know that the DVD player has a better picture. I mean, and I got one. But I have to tell you that the remote control on that is not user-friendly. So for my group, at least, you better stay until it becomes user-friendly. You better stay with VCR or DVD.
Well, it depends on the brand, though. I mean, each brand has its own remote control, and some of them, as you say, there are not a lot of user-friendly remote controls, even if you are not visually impaired. But there are some companies that really make decent remote controls, or you can buy a second remote control separate from the actual set, program it to work with that, and have a better remote control. But you're so right. I mean, I have stacks of remote controls, and some of them are just nightmares. I mean, who thought these up, and who needs all these extra controls? Most people never use all the extra buttons that are on there.
I have a whole bag full of them, and I got to tell you, I just want to press a button, and I want it to do what I want it to do when I want it to do it.
I have to keep a flashlight in my home theater, because after we turn the lights down to watch the movie, and if I want to adjust the volume or something, I can't. There's 400 buttons on the remote control, and I can't read them all in the dark, and I have to put on my glasses, take out the flashlight to find the essential button. I've just about memorized where the volume control is, but the rest of them are in the dark. Some of the remotes actually light up in the dark, which helps, or have different colored lights, which gives you the green light is play, and that's what you really want to know where that is.
Well, you know, it's very frustrating at times, because I have a certain, I'm not going to mention the cable company, Dave, so don't cut me off, but I have video on demand over 1,000 hours, can't use it, because you have to be able to see to use it.
Well, it's very unfortunate, and I know, like, I host a website on the internet for my radio show, and my webmaster takes exceptional amount of time and care to make sure that the site works for visually impaired people, because so many websites don't, and the screen readers can't read the website. It just says link rather than what the link is to. So the same is true with so many of these electronics products. They don't think about people who may be impaired in any way, whether it's bad, difficult fingers, having arthritis, or being visually impaired, and it's really unfortunate. And
well, it is, but, you know, I think the Internet is going to open up to us. I believe it will. I think there are people that are making it possible today, or trying to make it possible, so that you get things called the Reader's Edge, you know, and hook them onto your computer and things like that, and it will read the stuff on the screen. So I believe that we will see it open up.
Right, but only if the people who provide the content are aware of that and make the content accessible to these readers. So it's really important.
Right, yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. Okay, well, next is Champagne. This is line number three. Hello.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to what you were talking about as far as CDs and CD players being able to read and not read. I purchased a dual disc, a DVD on one side and a CD on the other. And for the life of me, I cannot get any of the brand new CD players or even some of the older CD players to play the CD side. I can't even get the CD-ROM player on a computer to play the CD side of this dual disc. And instead, the only other alternative that it presents me with is playing the audio setup on the DVD side. And I had two other questions. One was, can you tell us a little bit about the life of vinyl right now as we see it? Is it making a comeback, or it's still way too high-end? And I'm too interested to hear your first answer, so I forgot what I was going to ask for a third question. Go ahead.
Well, let's see. You're talking about a DVD, CD burner, not just a player. This, you're recording discs, and they won't play on other machines, is what you're saying.
No. This is Bruce Springsteen and the Seeger Sessions, We Shall Overcome. I bought, it was a dual disc. It has a DVD on one side, and on the other side it has the CD with just the recorded music. And on the DVD side, you can watch a documentary of the making of the Seeger Sessions and the different musicians and jabber like that. And then the other side should have been just music only. And I cannot get the CD side of this dual disc to play on any modern or 5-year-old or 20-year-old CD player.
Well, then you should call Sony, and I'm not being facetious. You should call Sony Music Products and say you want a replacement disc. It is a problem, and they admit there's a problem that some players won't play the CD side, but they should make good on it because I know I have a couple of those discs, and they do play.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that they stretch the tolerance of the system, basically, and again, here's one of those things that it's hard to explain, but they did this there's a whole reason. First of all, it's a higher copy protection level, so you can't copy it as easily. And then, of course, the idea is to get you to buy the thing because it has this bonus video package with it, so you can see it as well as hear it. But it just makes everything that much more complicated. And I think you should actually call, there should be an 800 number for Sony Music, and call them up and say, this won't play on any player. What are you going to do about it? And they're either going to give you a new disc or they're going to give you a refund, because you should not be saddled with this. This is their problem, not your problem. And I've heard this before. It's been in some of the trade magazines that some of these dual discs don't play on conventional CD players. Also, they're a little bit thicker than a regular CD. And so they throw the tolerances off. And somewhere maybe out there in the universe, there's a player it'll play on, but obviously you don't have that player. And that's the important thing, is that you don't have the player. As far as LPs, LPs are never coming back. This is the train has left the station. And even the high-end area, there are so many new CD and DVD formats that have the same audio quality as LP now. You can get these 196-bit, 24-bit, 196 kilohertz sampling rates that equal LP sound, finally, in digital domain. And even most of the audiophiles are admitting to that. And if you don't have the disc, you can put them on hard drives, etc. So LPs are a novelty. And yeah, in fact, they're even making CD players now where you can manually spin the CD with your finger like you can at a disco. So you can do a disco thing with CDs. And they're actually putting all this digital circuitry in to make it sound like an analog LP when you slip it and slide it and so you can play it at a disco for dance parties and things like that. So LPs are a wonderful novelty, but they're not coming back, and there's no future for them, and it's just not going to happen. And yes, they were a wonderful medium, and ironically, perhaps, people are going to pull out an LP in 100 years and find it still plays if they have a cartridge and a turntable, and they're going to pull out a CD in 100 years and find out it doesn't play because the data bits have decayed. That's still, we don't know the answer to that problem. Some CDs seem to be decaying and some don't. So there may be CDs in 100 years that sound fine, but some of them aren't going to play. So It's, and by the way, 100 years from now, we're not going to, who knows what the medium is going to be. It's probably going to be the equivalent of some sort of memory chip. And, of course, they're not going to allow us to own any music in the future. We're all just going to be renting or leasing music. We're never going to be able to own our own recordings anymore unless we make the music ourselves. So it's going to be an interesting future, and unfortunately, LPs aren't going to be part of that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Just this is one of the things that I wanted to ask you about. I think we know that sooner or later, some point is going to come where people are going to get all of their media by downloading it. Music, TV shows, movies, probably most of the way that's people going to get it by downloading it. And so is it also the case that it's going to be in probably some sort of digital storage medium? It's going to be a little stick, a little chip, a little something that you're going to in your house, you're going to have some kind of a box that essentially is going to be a computer hard drive. Stuff's going to get downloaded to that. You're going to stick a little something in it. Could be like a credit card, whatever, and then you'll pull that out and walk over to your TV, your audio system. You can put it in your car. You'll put it in your iPod, however you're going to want to use it. That's what it's going to be like.
And they're going to charge you for every different device.
Every time you listen and every time you watch.
So, yeah, if you want to play it in your car, it's going to be one expense. If you want to play it, you know, in your home stereo, it's going to be another expense. In your laptop or your headphone stereo, your iPod, whatever, as you said. It's interesting feature. You know, there was already, you can go out to the store now and buy a 1 terabyte hard drive. That's a lot of data, David. I think some of your guests have given the equivalent of what, you know, a stack of paper from here to the moon or something like that. And that's just the beginning. I mean, in a year, there'll be 2 terabyte hard drives, and in 5 years, there'll be 4 terabyte hard drives. When you start talking about that much data storage on a home machine that's going to be cheap, I mean, we're talking about a $200 to $300 hard drive ultimately, and perhaps less. Or you can have a hard drive that's the size of a quarter that's going to store 500 gigabytes. I know a lot of people saying, what's all this stuff mean? Well, it means that you can put 1,000 CDs on one little hard drive, basically. Or 10,000 CDs on one of these drives. And so your whole collection is going to be on one hard drive. And then, of course, you'll have all these little the memory density of these thumb drives. They're coming out with improved memory chips now. In another year or two, you know, computers aren't going to have to boot from the hard drive. There'll be a non-volatile memory chip where the booting is done from. So it'll happen instantaneously or within like 20 seconds rather than 2 or 3 minutes. And the whole future is going to be different. I mean, they've got 8 gigabyte USB thumb drives or memory keys now, 8 gigabytes. I mean, that's a lot of storage on one little chip the size of your thumb. And so the future is endless in this. And the idea of optical drives the way we know them, it's just why even have a CD or a DVD ultimately when this is, and also they have so much more copy control over these other devices. So it's going to be an interesting future. And I'm not sure I'll be sitting here with you when it's happening, but it's actually probably in our foreseeable future, certainly before you retire, David. So,
yes. Well, that was the other question. Not when would I retire, but when does this happen? Are we talking about 5 years, 10 years?
I'd say within 10 years. Yeah. It's moving very fast in that direction. And the future, the issue right now is getting true broadband to everybody in America, to wire every home with fiber optic cable or high-speed wireless, so that people can do this, because the big stumbling block now is only half the population has broadband. Mm-hmm. So you still have to keep making these discs for people who need to go and buy them at the record store, pardon me, at the music retailer. Record store, what a great idea.
No, believe me, I still talk about records, yes, record store. Yeah.
So, you know, that's the bottleneck right now. I mean, Korea, 95% of the population has ultra-high-speed broadband. They're totally digital. I mean, Japan's going that way, and we could be the last country in the world to have it.
Well, we have about 20 minutes left, and we have some other callers here. Let's talk with some other folks. DeWitt County, this is the next caller, line 4. Hello.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Yeah.
I'm a dedicated Luddite, and I refuse to spend money to watch TV when it comes over the air. And when they make the switch over to having to have a different tuner, I'm not going to buy one. I was wondering what I can do to just watch DVDs at home. Just buying a separate screen and just not having a receiver whatsoever. What does that entail?
It's very simple. You go out and buy a $50 DVD player, plug it into the back of your TV, and watch DVDs. It's cheap and easy. As far as you're not wanting to buy a converter box, well, then the only channels you get to see is the religious channels, because they have an exemption to stay on analog broadcasting after everybody else changes to digital. But all the channels you're used to now are just, you're going to tune in and it's going to be a blank screen. There's going to be nothing there.
Well, that's what there's, what is there at the present time, in my opinion.
I can't dispute that, but go ahead.
Yeah, my TV, it's a Samsung, like 15 years old. It's going to crap out. So when I get a new, replace the screen, I could, what happens if I just, buy a monitor, and then to hook that up, what does it take?
Absolutely nothing.
You just plug it in.
Yeah, but actually, even though you say there's no worthwhile programming on existing TV, and I don't dispute that. Of course, there is Channel 12, which has some great programming.
Oh, yes.
Now, with the next year, you're not going to really pay any extra for having that digital tuner built into the TV. It's a government, federal law that all the TVs above 20 inches have the digital tuner. So you're only going to save about $50 by getting a TV that's just simply a monitor. So you might as well bite the bullet and get a TV with a digital tuner, but you don't have to, you don't have to watch digital TV. You can just get a cheap DVD player and watch DVDs, but at least you'll have it in there. If some week there's some program on Channel 12, you'll need, of course, an antenna. You won't have cable, but if you want to watch a program, at least you have the option.
Okay. Oh, an antenna brings up another question. Is there any particular simple antenna? I mean, I have the whole, all the things sticking out every which way on a tower at my house. Is there anything better than that? And these, around like flying saucer things that they advertise.
No, they don't work.
They don't work.
A conventional antenna, and just for everybody else listening, just a point of interest, is that there's no difference between a digital antenna and an analog antenna. The RF, the radio frequency carrier waves, don't really care whether what's on them is digital or analog. They're still going to be received in the same way. The way an antenna works doesn't change. The difference is that if you're in a fringe area and where you'd get a snowy picture on analog, you'll probably get no picture on digital, or you'll get a perfect picture. There's only one very narrow band where the digital picture degrades and becomes blocky and strange, but unlike analog, which fades out gracefully, digital doesn't fade out gracefully. It sort of is a great picture at one point, and then is a short zone of a few miles where it's awful, and then it just disappears completely.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good, thank you. Let's go to Champagne. This is line number one. Hello.
Oh, hi there.
Hi.
I'm glad to be talking to you. I was a big a proponent of DAT tapes when they came out, and then they were outlawed or whatever. But I bought some players, and my favorite one was a Sony little tiny DAT player. The thing says WMD-DT1. It's it's about the size of a cell phone, but the thing was made cheaply, and the battery compartment, there's something in there broke, and I called Sony, and they don't have any in their warehouse or something like that. And I'm wondering, is there a place where either I can get a repair done? The battery compartment door won't latch because a piece broke. Can I either get it repaired or buy a new one? And I don't know where to go, aside from eBay. And I put my name on eBay, and I haven't heard a thing.
Yeah, eBay may not be the place, but there are discussion groups on the web. And I can't tell you how to Google exactly what you need, but if you put DAT or digital audio tape and burrow down, you'll find various groups that have fascinations with these, and you can get on a discussion group where somebody's going to know either where to get it fixed or how to fix it. Yeah, it's a shame because Sony, any company, is only required to keep spare parts for 7 years, and I have the same unit you do, by the way. So
it's a wonderful little thing.
It is. And it makes very good recordings.
Yes.
If you can find DAT tape these days. But
well, I have my own. I put all my LPs on DAT tapes, and all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah, that's the wonders of technology. Isn't great? They tell you DAT is the future, and you do that, and the next week they come by and say, oh, no, it's recordable CD. Forget that. That's the end of it.
Right.
But your best bet is to try to find somebody on the Internet who has had the same experience. And believe me, there's some guy out there in Des Moines or in Oklahoma City who figured out how to fix your problem and did it with his machine and will either tell you how, or if he's honest enough or she's honest enough, you can send your machine to him or her and they will fix it.
Okay.
Because I doubt anybody here in town, in Champaign-Urbana, would have the expertise. So just get on some of these discussion groups, you know, Google down digital audio tape to find out, and then put your, or even put your machine model number into the Google search bar and see what comes up. You may find some company in England that had four of them in stock and is willing to sell you one cheap because they want to get rid of them or something.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thanks
sure.
a lot.
All right. Very good. Next is Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
With increase in electric rates, I have a question about, I heard that even though a TV is off, it still will take a little electricity. Any comments about that?
Yes, virtually everything electronic that you own continues to draw a small trickle of electricity when it's off, because that's how the remote controls work. The set has to have the remote control receiver turned on so you can turn the set on with the remote, and that even applies to stereo gear and DVD players and TVs. And my advice is you can't really do much about that when you're home. I mean, it's really inconvenient to go and unplug the TV and replug it back in every time you want to watch it. But if you're going to be gone for more than a couple of days, I recommend simply unplugging everything. That has two benefits. One is you do save electricity, which does add up eventually. And number two, at least during 9 months of the year or so, if you have a thunderstorm, it protects your equipment from a lightning strike. And even the best surge protector can still, if the lightning strike is right on your house, you can fry your equipment even if you have a surge protector. So it serves a double purpose. But in general, every single TV on the market, there are no exceptions, some better than others. Look for the green energy star seal of approval, because that means they've gotten it down as low as it can go. But they're all going to draw a trickle of current when they're off. And unfortunately, we're wasting an incredible amount of power in this country with these devices. They're working on alternatives where they can just have a capacitor charge and actually not take the trickle from the power line and then be very efficient about receiving the remote signal. I mean, it's possible to reduce this, but the best you can do is one of those Energy Star seals of approval for low energy usage, or efficient energy usage, I should say. But yes, you are paying for it every time your TV stays plugged in. We're only talking maybe, you know, a couple of pennies a week, but if you've got 20 devices in your house, and most people do, suddenly that's, you know, 25 cents, 50 cents a week, and pretty soon you're paying $25, $50 a year for power that you really don't use that's being wasted. And I'm sure Ameren IP would also love the fact that if you cut down your usage. So, yes, but there's nothing much you can do about it.
Well, thanks a lot, Rich.
Sure.
All right, thank you. About 5-6 minutes left. Rich Warren is our guest. He writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette and is here to answer questions, and we'll continue doing that with as much time as we have. Next caller up is in Bourbonus, and this is line number three. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I hope this is in Rich's bailiwick. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, one of the Chicago broadcast stations reported on their news that Verizon is going to start broadcasting advertising over their cell phones. Do you know about that, Rich?
Well, yeah, there's all kinds of proposals for doing that. It won't affect, if you pay for your regular cell phone service, you're not going to get any ads in your conversations. You're not going to get, it's not going to ring and they're going to say, buy Joe's Pizza, now you can hear the party you're speaking with. They are going to do it with text messaging and some of the other features. One of the features they want to use is video, and that's how they're going to help pay for the video, is when you want to watch a video on your cell phone, you're going to get an ad, just like you do when you buy a DVD and there's a trailer for an upcoming picture at the head of the DVD. There is a couple of services, though, that are considering, and Verizon, I don't believe, is one of these, but they are considering very low-cost cell phone service if you're willing to hear an ad every time you get a call. But that is not what Verizon is pushing at the moment. But don't worry, your regular cell phone service will not be interrupted with an ad while you're talking to the person, as long as you're paying the regular cell phone prices.
Okay.
But it's mainly a video thing, that they want to sell you video, and this is one of the ways they can finance it, is by, you know, charging you 20 cents or a dollar for the video, but they pick up an extra dollar from General Motors when you have to see a picture of a Chevy before you get the video.
Are they all going to be doing it before long?
Oh, yeah. It's just like the airlines. If one cell phone company does it, you can bet the rest of them are going to do it as well.
And gets away with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you recommend any phones for somebody who wants to mainly make calls but also check his emails with his phone?
No, I'm not an expert on that, and I find, I've wrote a column about it recently, that I find the quality of most cell phones to be so bad as to be embarrassing, and I just don't understand why they expect us to put up with this. Verizon keeps advertising it's the network. Well, they have a great network. Their towers are great. Their switching gear is great. Their phones, I can't say what they are on the air.
Okay, you're not blown away by the iPhone?
Well, I've seen the description of it, and it sounds terrific, but it only works with Singular, for one thing. It won't work with Verizon or T-Mobile. And also, again, it's a Swiss Army knife thing that, paying $500 for a phone that does everything, I'm not sure I need that. I want a phone that has good voice quality.
Exactly, and doesn't drop the calls.
Exactly, yes.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And next is Piatt County, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, first of all, I love the Swiss Army knife metaphor. I agree totally. My question, though, is for our DVD player. We get DVDs from a small family-owned business, and almost every DVD starts after 20 minutes or 30 minutes or so, starts that horrible skipping and strange noise and, you know, messing up. And so my friend takes it and cleans it. But not every DVD does that, and not every time we play it. So can I assume that it is random DVDs, or would it be our machine that's doing that?
It sounds like your machine. Again, it's just one of these tolerance issues that a certain amount of damage to the DVD, the machine will overlook. Mm-hmm. But, for example, people get thrilled that you can buy a $50 DVD player or a $100 DVD player. Some of the differences involve how good the error correction is mm-hmm. in the DVD player and how flexible the servo mechanism is to correct those errors. And plus, yeah, there are definite variations between different DVDs and different pressing plants. And so also after you've rented them and people have put fingerprints on them or minute scratches, which you may or may not see, mm-hmm. it really is a challenge to the machine to play this wide range. So it's a combination of factors, but it may in fact be your DVD player is getting toward the edge of its usefulness or end of its usefulness.
It was a low-budget DVD player.
Yeah, and that's, again, I hate to say this, but you do get what you pay for in a lot of cases.
Gosh.
And, you know, now that I guess one of the big chains was selling DVD players for $29.95, you could buy 5 of them and just throw them away when they break, you know. It's as simple as that. But I recommend spending, you know, $150 and getting a decent unit from a brand name like Sony or Denon or somebody who still puts some quality into it.
Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you. And next we'll talk with someone on a cell phone on line 1. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to respond to one of the earlier callers who had made a comment about whether there's a phantom charge on the television or whatever. I find that for me, I've got 10 things on like one. It's not 10. It's 7 things on one power strip. And it's actually no big deal to turn that off before I go to bed. And, before I go to work, no one will be using it during those times. And actually, if you, figure like 5 watts per device times, the 20 hours that it's not being used, I find it to be worthwhile. So I don't think you have to wait till you're leaving town. If you have things on power strips, you can quickly turn things off all at once. Anyway, that's all.
Well, I think it's an excellent suggestion, and I agree, except if you have, of course, a VCR with a timer on it. And unless it automatically resets a timer from the on-the-air signal, you got through that. But I agree that if you have a number of devices that you're not going to be using for periods of time and a power strip, just turn off the power strip. That's an excellent suggestion.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Let's go to line 2, and this is a caller in Urbana. Hello.
I was going to mention the power strip, but I'm also intrigued at the number of people who walk away from their computer, are gone for a long period of time, and leave their computer with the screen on, when they could put it in at least standby. It does take a long time, it seems, for computers to boot up. And I'm just wondering how much power we will all save as a nation if of those of us who are computer users would just at least put the computer in standby. Well, so that's my suggestion on power savings.
Well, actually, it's supposed to happen automatically. That's why I'm a little surprised. At least I think any operating system after Windows 98 SE supposedly was supposed to put the computer. You can set the settings. There's a menu of settings, but I know all my computers after, I think, 15 minutes go on standby. And now with LCD screens for computers, once those go on standby, they really stop. I mean, unlike cathode ray tube monitors, CRT monitors, which actually had to keep the filaments warm but stop the scan, LCDs, when you turn off the light, you basically turn off the power. And so it's an excellent suggestion that computers should automatically go on standby. Turning your computer on and off is detrimental to the computer. The contraction and expansion of the components from the heat of turning it on and off and the surges, et cetera, diminish the life of the computer. But as far as the computer automatically going on standby is an excellent suggestion for saving power.
I have Windows XP, and it just turns the screen off after a while, but I can still hear the fan running.
The fan will continuously run because it's in the power supply, and the power supply has to be kept cool. You can't really turn off the power supply. You can turn off the processor, which is what the automatic circuits are supposed to do. And the processor is what draws the main amount of power, and the hard drives, which spool down. So the computer itself, the brains of the computer and the storage will go into a standby mode, but the power supply never does.
Hmm. So when I go to Windows and tell it to go click on log, turn off, then standby, something different or is happening or not happening when I do that as compared to just letting it do it by itself?
It should be pretty much the same depending. There's so many different standby modes. I remember on my menu there's like two or three different standby modes. In fact, if you go into what's called the BIOS of the machine, it lists all the different standby modes you can activate. So you can actually, even before you get to Windows, tell the machine what it should be doing when Windows says, okay, we're going to the standby now, and then it will shut down. But I believe it's pretty hard to shut down the power supply. There's always a certain amount. It's like the TV set. It's waiting for you to say, touch the keyboard or whatever to turn it back on, so it keeps a trickle of power going through the machine. And there are certain components that have to be kept cool. And I don't recall if you can shut down the power supply, but again, you might want to talk to our computer expert at 1 o'clock or 1:05, because that's not entirely my expertise, but I have five computers in my office, so I had some experience.
There's also all these little things that have my cell phone charger. There was a, until I realized it was hot and unplugged it, there was an electric pencil sharpener. It had kind of gotten buried on my desk. All these things with these little boxes that are transformers lose some power just by being transformers and plugged in.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's a good excuse for using a power strip, is to have all of these things on one strip. And when you're not charging something or using it, simply turn it off. And I'm guilty of that myself, and I'm probably going to change that pretty soon, because I have my external hard drive has one, and I don't even use it when the computer's not on, and my cell phone, and you name it. I've got more of these little black wall warts, as they call them, that sit there and burn 2 or 3 watts even when you're not charging anything or using them. And we're wasting an incredible amount of electricity with those things. And again, that's a great excuse to go out and buy a $6 power strip with a switch. And of course, the switches are all lighted now, which wastes power. But just turn all of them off at once when you're not charging something. So that's a very good suggestion.
All right. For now, we're going to have to stop. With our thanks to Rich Warren, you can read his columns about consumer electronics in the News Gazette. And he's the host of a little show called The Midnight Special. Oh, yeah. And it's on Saturdays at what time is that show?
2 o'clock. And it's a great honor to be on AM 580.
You're on AM 580. Thank you very much, Rich.
My pleasure.
Every once in a while, Rich is also here on the show. We talk about consumer electronics.